the world to turn around. All our hopes have come to be, and people gather around. They are brought what they can bring, and no battle when they last. A hundred and a song sing, the revolution starts now.
This is Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. And we're the music show on Sunday nights. And this week, my guest is Jay McInerney. How are you, sir?
Hey, Steve. Good to see you.
It's good to see you. I used to bump into you down south in Nashville from time to time, and now you're back up here. We were talking earlier. This is the 20th anniversary coming up of the publication of Bright Lights, Fix City.
My first novel, Bright Lights, Fix City.
Yeah, that's...
So when you gave me this incredibly difficult assignment of five songs, I've been around a long time, and I couldn't figure out how to narrow it down until I suddenly was thinking about the music I first was listening to, the music actually that drew me to New York, probably, to some extent, in 70. It was like late 79 when I got here.
Of course.
And, and I was thinking about the music that the protagonist of the novel was listening to, because I've had to go back and look at it recently. I've been doing some interviews and some writing about it. And so I thought it might be fun to do the soundtrack of, more or less, of Bright Lights, Big City, or alternately of my first year in New York, which was a pretty interesting time musically.
And the first track that you pulled up here had to be...
Well, this is a band that I just love, Television, and probably the most obscure band on my playlist here, but, you know, a real cult band, and for many people, the New York band. You know, we've got a brand new music scene in New York. You know, I guess you might date the start of it from the Strokes, and... bands like the AAS and the Rapture, but to me, everybody talks about the Velvet Underground influence, but I think all of these bands were heavily influenced by Television, one of the great New York kind of punk slash new wave bands. And I actually came to New York, and I heard these guys at CBGB's, and I used to see Richard Lloyd and Tom Verlaine, the two great guitarists, wandering around the Village, and they lived in my neighborhood, which was a block from CBGB. So, a really, really amazing band and a very influential one.
Television, Venus de Milo. Television on Air America Radio. My guest this week is Jay McInerney, and we're playing the soundtrack to your first few years in New York to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Bright Lights, Big City.
Yeah, basically my first year, really. All this music was in the air in 1980, and someone who was very influential for all of us, I think, and someone who was really part of the soundtrack of that era was Elvis Costello.
Yeah, Elvis Costello made me want an electric guitar again.
Yeah.
I'd sort of been in a singer-songwriter thing, and then I saw, I heard My Aim Is True, and all of a sudden at 27, I went out and bought an electric guitar.
That's a great record. Well, this is from Armed Forces, and actually, I was thinking about, I was talking to my friend Brett Easton Ellis recently. I went through a whole bunch of titles for Bright Lights, Big City, and one of them that I discarded was Less Than Zero, which, as it turns out, became the title of a very good and famous book in its own right. But this next song I picked for a variety of reasons is Party Girl.
Listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. The Windsor Court. This is Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. My guest this week is Jay McInerney, and we're basically playing the soundtrack to your first year in New York.
Exactly.
Talking about how much New York's changed. It is amazing.
It really has. When I came to New York, there was really a kind of an edge. Basically, it was the edge of the island of Manhattan. It was dirty, dangerous. But it was cheap, and there was a real cultural ferment going on. That was where the exciting stuff was happening, the art and the music and, for that matter, the writing, I guess. It was still possible in 1979, 1980 to come to New York and find a tenement walk up in the East Village for $250 a month, which made it possible to
pursue a car in Manhattan for that now. It's amazing.
No, it's a very different world, and now there are other bohemias. We're just talking about Williamsburg. There's Hoboken. It's moving even further out into Brooklyn and Queens.
My guitar player lives in the East Village, but yeah. He has a studio in Williamsburg. And Roscoe's theory is that when the second sushi joint goes in, it's over. You can't afford to live there anymore.
And in fact, the whole notion of a bohemia is really of an urban bohemia is centralization. I mean, once you got some people dispersing on one side of a river and some people on another side of a river, I mean, you no longer have a cultural center. And that's what I think, one of the things that's really different about New York now.
Even Nashville, when I first moved there, it was very concentrated. And, I got there in 1974. And, at that point, the songwriters were still kind of, the weirdos in town. And publishers knew that they had to let Kris Kristofferson, write The Silver-Tongued Devil if they wanted to get Help Me Make It Through the Night. And they left us alone. Yeah. And it was, actually, even drugs can change the real estate. Like cocaine, when it was just speed and whiskey, it was pretty democratic. Cocaine came along and it created a caste system. And some people kind of moved out. And it sort of changed things.
Yeah, in fact, cocaine was kind of one of the themes and part of the furniture of my first novel. And this next song that I've selected, one of the reasons I picked it is because it's just got such a jangly beat. And this is a song, Tattooed Love Boys by Chrissy Hynde and the Pretenders, that makes you think you're wired, even if you're not. I first heard them actually by probably second, third week I was in New York. They came and played at the Palladium, which was then just a music venue, small theater, really great place. I heard Elvis Costello there, Joe Jackson, Police, people like that, before it became a really glitzy nightclub in 1985. But this was the pre-gentrification East Village. And even though, the Pretenders were, came to us via London, I always thought of them as, part of that urban soundtrack of that time. Love the Pretenders.
The Pretenders, Tattooed Love Boys on Air America Radio.
they say. Stop sniffling. You're gonna make some plastic surgeon a rich man. All with the prestige and the glory. Another human interest story. You are that.
Pretenders on Air America Radio. That's, I love her.
God, she's good. What a nasty attitude. What that beautiful, nasty attitude.
You're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. This is Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. My guest is Jay McInerney, and we're playing music that's about, you know, the late 70s, early 80s in New York when Jay came to town, and this is the soundtrack to, well, a big part of your life and your first novel.
And my first novel. And actually, you can't talk about New York at that time without talking about the Talking Heads, although yeah. They eventually became America's band too. But when I got to the city, they were still kind of a CBGB's kind of New York East Village art band. And this next song I selected comes from the Remain in Light album, which was a real kind of breakthrough album for them. And it just so happens that this is quoted in Bright Lights, Big City. It has the memorable lines, facts all come with points of view, facts don't do what I want them to. particularly relevant since the protagonist was by day a fact checker at the New Yorker. Right. But, you know, at night he was staggering around Manhattan and trying to get into the Mud Club and trying to be a cool guy. And in fact, downtown scene was the Mud Club was the place besides CBGB's where I actually remember seeing some of these people. I was, you know, a sort of desperate hanger-on. Once in a while I was with somebody cool enough to get me in the door, and I used to see people like, you know, David Byrne and Deborah Harry at the bar at the Mud Club. And this is Cross-Eyed and Painless.
Changing my shape.
Talking Heads on Air America Radio. This is Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now. My guest is Jay McInerney, and Graham Parker coming up on this. I thought was really cool.
Graham Parker, I don't know, you don't hear a lot about Graham Parker lately, but this was one of the great albums of any time, but it actually came out in, I think, 1980, Squeezing Out Sparks. It was hard to pick a track, really, because every track is so good. And, this is his masterpiece.
He was hugely influential, too. I mean, you know, I don't think we have Elvis Costello as a performer and as a singer, you know, in the context of a rock band without Graham Parker.
Yeah, and to me, I always, you know, kind of associate those guys.
Absolutely.
In that time. The attitude, the combination of, you know, punk attitude with really superior kind of songwriting and musicianship that you just didn't get in the Sex Pistols or you know, the Voidoids.
Right.
What did I pick? Passion is an Ordinary Word.
No, you picked Nobody Hurts You.
Nobody Hurts You, which was a good theme song for me at the time, since I was doing a really good job of hurting myself.
This is Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. This is Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio. My guest is Jay McInerney, and this has been a gas. This is that we've been playing stuff that Jay brought in that's basically the soundtrack to his first year in New York and the time of the publication of Bright Lights, Big City, which is the 20th anniversary, and you're working on a novel right now. I mean, that's your job. That's what you do.
That's my day job. I'm just finishing a novel. It's doing 2 weeks actually. And it's also set in New York, a very different New York than the city I wrote about in Bright Lights, Big City. Actually takes place in the fall following 9/11, September, October, November of 2001. Wow. And it's kind of a love story of two people who meet in the wake of 9/11. They actually meet when they're working downtown in a soup kitchen, feeding the rescue workers. And you know, I think most of us who were here then were really shaken. You know, it's obviously an understatement, but almost everyone that I know was reevaluating their lives.
And some people left.
An incredible brush with mortality, and I think all of us kind of looked at our marriages and our careers and really wondered if another
started being really nice to firemen, you know, people that we've been cussing because they've been yelling at our girlfriends for years and years.
Yeah, but you know, I think the idea was, you know, if a plane hit your building, you know, where did you want, you know, who did you want to be with in your last minute? What did you want your career title to read? You know, or did you even want to be in the city? And so the book, you know, is about that period, right? The working title is The Good Life.
Cool.
We'll see if that survives to the end. Bright Lights, Big City, actually. I've been thinking a lot about titles and trying to remember how I come up with them because I'm at that stage.
Right, where you have stage to finally name it something, yeah.
Bright Lights had a million working titles. I mean, I remember one of them was like, God, some of them were really bad. Dancing at Heartbreak was one. Heartbreak being a nightclub of the period, and
right.
I thought it was an interesting pun. Of course, I was wrong. But
well, also nightclubs in New York last as long as they last.
And another one was well, as I mentioned, another one was Less Than Zero, which, as it turns out, was a much better title for Bret Easton Ellis's first book than for mine. Mine wasn't quite that nihilistic. My first novel actually was, you know, it was kind of a. It had satirical elements, but it really was a romance about a boy, you know, boy coming to the city, kind of a Dick Whittington story, you know, of a coming-of-age novel set in New York City. And so I finally started going through the music that I loved as the deadline approached. And I've been a blues fan for most of my life, and I was going through the blues, basically, all the great artists that I loved, Robert Johnson and Buck Owyatt and Muddy Waters, and then I threw on Jimmy Reed.
Yeah,
and,
Jimmy Reed's an intense thing, too. even when you mention all of those people, Charlie Sexton, he's an old friend. I've literally known him since he was 9 years old. His little boy Marlon was born, and you know, he'd just take Marlon out riding around with him in the car, even when he was like when he was a baby. Yeah. He'd just put him in the car seat and they'd drive around in his 40 Merc coupe. And I talked to him one day. He says, "Yeah, Marlon, man, he likes all the stuff I listen to. I put Muddy Waters, you know." And he dug that. Said, "Man, when I played Jimmy Reed, it scared the hell out of him."
Jimmy Reed is unearthly and weird, and he's a great artist, and I think this song to me kind of epitomized the feeling I was looking at. This really is the plot of the book summarized in two and a half minutes.
So the title was right in
the
front
title,
of you
the title
time.
Was there, and I sometimes feel bad because I think I get credit for the title more often than Jimmy Reed does, and you know, it's his title.
Yeah.
You know, once again, another white guy ripping off the blues.
But, yeah, well,
but I would like to once again thank Jimmy Reed and you know, this is a song I just never get tired of. It's really eerie and beautiful.
Big city.
My guest this week has been Jay McInerney. This has been a gas, man.
That's great. It's been great for me.
This is Steve Earle, and you're listening to The Revolution Starts Now on Air America Radio.